Previously on the Bus Inspectors podcast.
They turned to me one day and said, "We're buying a bus."
The pioneers of preservation, who rescued many of the vintage buses we treasure today.
He decided that he had to buy one of these buses when he left school. Exeter Corporation would not sell to private individuals. Dad managed to find out who had bought the six, and he had to meet somebody down a back street in Exeter and then purchase it off of them.
Where do you keep a vintage bus?
Storage is the bus preservationist's biggest problem.
Winkley was used for a pig store, actually. The shed was back in 1965.
These pioneers remortgaged their houses in order to provide a safe home for the vehicle.
And the bus inspectors took us on their travels on a mission to grade the nation's historic fleet.
Whenever you're applying for external funding, now you only have to say, this is where we are in the NARTM list of vehicles that have been graded on their part in the story, to what extent they're unique.
Working out which ones are special and why, and then making some effort to make sure they are the ones that live into the fifth and sixth decades of the 21st century, I think that's probably a really sensible thing to do, isn't it?
We have three heritage vehicles. Firstly, we have the Bristol K open top on Yala Right, known as the Old Girl, the oldest double decker that's still in its original ownership. So it was purchased by Southern Vectis in 1939, and we still have it today.
One careful owner. Andrew Wickham is the managing director of Go South Coast, a major bus operator in the south of England and among the largest in the Go Ahead Group. Andrew runs a fleet of more than 850 modern buses and coaches. But as you've heard, he's kept on some older ones too.
The second oldest one is the Daimler up in Swindon. We acquired that along with Thamesdown Transport, which we bought in 2017. And then the third one is the 1979 Bristol VRT, which was Hanson Dorset and then Wilson Dorset, and that's in our fleet here.
So not all heritage buses live in museums. And in this episode of the Bus Inspectors podcast, we'll be finding out why many of today's bus operators take such pains to celebrate their heritage.
It all started with my father's regrets of scrapping one of the W&G Ducrow bodied single deckers that my grandfather had kept chickens in.
How much does history matter to the people who ride on the buses?
The turn of the handle and the ticket coming out of the machine and getting stuffed into your pocket.
Oh my goodness, this is very exciting.
What's in a bus company name?
Badger line.
Or a route number?
I think the 352.
54A.
Well, that was the 118 that went from my village to my school in Ringrin, Sussex.
And what happens if you change them? I mean, does the world stop turning if the 96 suddenly turns into a 2?
When I started out many years ago, we were one of the MDs at the time, said, look, lad, you change your network, you bleed passengers.
We'd better stay on route then. I don't want you bleeding on the moquette.
Buses generally are a really, really important part of the fabric of society. We say this to drivers and engineers, that a driver who's been with us for some time will have driven people to school, they'll have driven people to hospital, they'll have driven people on their first dates, to funerals, you name it. The fact they're doing it makes a real positive impact on people's lives.
Buses are a part of who we are. Like the football team we support, the pub we drink in, and the radio station we listen to.
Yes, I know. David, you're a man after my own heart.
The name of the local bus company somehow defines a little bit of our identity.
Blue Star.
Dunmarie.
Andrew Wickham's operation includes several bus companies whose names and liveries have been part of local life for generations.
I think the names are really important. For instance, on Yala White, we're Southern Vectis, and that's been Southern Vectis since it started, which is 90 plus years ago.
Southern Vectis combines two important strands of the island's heritage. The old Southern Railway, which ran the island's steam trains, and the Vectis Bus Company, which it bought in 1929. In fact, the word Vectis goes back a little bit further. It's the Roman name for the Isle of Wight. And who'd want to mess with the Romans? As politics and administrations have changed over the years, corporate brands have brought a more uniform look and feel to parts of the UK. And the names of many established bus operators have been lost from our streets. But Andrew and his team have taken a different approach to their branding.
The names are important, and it's about consistency. If you look at other brands outside of transport, people tend not to change their names very often. We had Marathon went to Snickers, but other names of W.H. Smith's, Marks and Spencer's, many brands are very long standing. And the view we've taken is to keep the brands. They are well established, they've got good names. Why would we want to change them?
That said, there have been times when Andrew and his team have decided an established name must change.
Hanson Dorset, which in our part of the world had become Wilson Dorset in 1983, long before this company became involved in it all. Wilson Dorset, in its last iteration, was based around Poole Bournemouth and the New Forest and then in Salisbury, with very little linkage between the two, actually, quite discrete areas. And as social media was getting going then, and a lot of people get information from Twitter and Facebook, and trying to run one big site for social media, as someone in Poole reading about the service change in Salisbury that was irrelevant to them, we thought wasn't appropriate. So in that case, we did do a brand change, and Salisbury became Salisbury Reds. In Poole and Bournemouth and the Forest, we became Moorbus, very much from the back of the successful sort of Moorbus brand that we introduced in 2003-2004.
So it's a balance between brand continuity and clarity. After all, passengers need to be able to understand the network in order to use it. The same goes for the routes themselves, and when there's a need to change for the benefit of passengers, Andrew is pragmatic.
No network can never change. I mean, we can't do that because land use changes, we get new developments, there's going to be quite a lot of house building coming up, so we can't keep the same network that we've always had. But we are very resistant to changing our network. When I started out many years ago, one of the sort of the wizened old people, one of the MDs at the time, said, "Look, lad, you change your network, you bleed passengers." And of course, it makes perfect sense because people plan their lives around the buses they use. If you change the network, you will lose some of those people because it won't be suitable to them. Hopefully, over time, you will get new people.
Passengers are at the heart of the decision making. And when it comes to routines, people don't like change. We all know how maddening it can be when the supermarket has a reshuffle.
People find change confusing. Sometimes you have to change and it's for the right reason. But yeah, I've seen many bus networks get into decline and in fact terminal decline with keep tinkering, and people don't understand it. You know, people who love buses understand it and love reading new timetables. Most people, it's a way of travelling around and they don't want disruption.
And there's one aspect of a bus company's routes which Andrew and his team will change only if absolutely necessary.
Generally speaking, we are very resistant to changing route numbers. And indeed, a quite example of that was when we found ourselves running the services in Bournemouth and Poole after yellow buses ceased trading, which was most exactly 2 years ago. And we had very little notice to sort of plan that. So what we did when we started was retained the yellow bus route numbers, the old yellow bus route numbers. We kept the same sort of routes. That meant there was some duplication with our existing route numbers in Bournemouth and Poole, and obviously that didn't make a lot of sense of going on. It could be confusing to people, so we had to renumber some routes.
So if you have to change established route numbers, how do you do it?
We looked at demand, and the services that carried the greatest number of people kept their number. So some of the new services we took on that were previously run by yellow buses kept their original numbers, and some longer standing services from the old Moor bus had to be renumbered. But we still tried to do it logically. So the 5 and 6 that go from Poole to Camford Heath became 25 and 26, and we repeated that where we had to.
Many miles away in rural Lincolnshire, one of England's oldest independent bus operators has been trading since the days when there was an horse up front.
The family business dates back to 1890, but motor bus operations began in 1919 with a Ford Model T 14-seater.
Anthony Delane Smith is the latest generation of the family to run Delane Buses. He's been there since 1982, and the company's rich heritage remains at the heart of the business today.
The family's always believed in promoting the brand, and our sort of keywords are continuity, reliability, and cleanliness, which are as important today as they've always been. And the double-decker livery, amongst many items, is seen as one of the key aspects of the Delane brand and has remained unchanged for the 76 years we've operated double-deckers in the fleet.
And if you close your eyes and float away to Lincolnshire, you'll be able to picture it.
It's two-tone blue, based on the lighter shade of blue, which is now known as Delane blue, with the roof and the mid-band along the bottom windows being the dark blue, with a triple ivory cream bands wrapping around the vehicle, which is a very traditional livery used by many companies years ago.
Every Delane bus is a proud ambassador for the brand, and not just on the outside.
We have a traditional Delane interior. Interiors have always been based on the colour red. The feeling of that is that on a cold winter's day, you're getting into something warm and inviting. And the vehicles are always finished with wood veneer, and we've been using the same type of tartan now for over 40 years.
It's a distinctive look and feel that has become an established ingredient in the life of Lincolnshire, a part of the local identity. Anthony believes this is an aspect of our heritage which we should take into the future.
Some PLCs or public owned companies have gone for the corporate look, whereas others have retained local identity. People see that as their own personal bus service. When you look back, there are always lessons to be learnt from the days of the corporations. Each town had its own livery. Independents still have their own liveries. And I think that is something important we should try and retain. London's always been different and always will. But I think in the provinces, it's important to keep that identity of each area.
In its livery, its name, its standards, and its many other traditions, Delane values and celebrates its heritage. But could change ever come? Anthony shudders at the thought.
I'd be horrified myself, let alone what passengers would think. It's something they've come to expect from a Delane vehicle, and it's a standard that we like to uphold. I entered the industry in the pre-deregulation era, so I've lived through the last few years of that. I lived through the deregulated era, and we're now moving into the unknown once again. I've seen us described once as an island of tranquility in an ever-changing sea. That description's always stuck with me, and I like to think our customers think of us like that. You know, again, they can rely on us at all times, regardless of the weather.
This is the Bus Inspectors Podcast, brought to you by the National Association of Road Transport Museums. In episode one of the series, Lord Peter Hendy gave us his view on the importance of heritage.
I think taking old buses and coaches out reminds people subliminally that actually mass public transport by road is still a good thing. I think, in fact, it's also a reminder to the people who manage the current bus industry that trying to change the names, the route numbers and everything all the time is not terribly bright, and that actually some of the old names and some of the history of the bus industry is frankly worth keeping. I think those of the major groups who've kept the names of the companies that they've bought over a long length of time have probably got more loyalty out of their market than people who keep changing them. Old vehicles with those names on, people are familiar with them, they're part of the scenery. Bringing out old vehicles in those circumstances just makes people happier. So let's do it.
You can hear the episode in full at thebusinspectors.com, where you can also read the latest on the Bus Inspectors project to grade the nation's historic buses. Later in this episode of the Bus Inspectors podcast...
A complete rebuild. So that was a new frame, got a lot of new panels. Every window pan had to come out.
Meet the heritage fleet.
I passed my test in that at the age of 18. And last year, I got to accompany my daughter to church in a wedding in that vehicle.
We'll also meet Claire.
have a fleet of three Leyland Nationals.
Three of a kind, or each one special?
It's special to us, and it's special to us because of all the good days out we've had, the blood, the sweat, the tears, the good times, the bad times, the breakdowns.
First, we've been invited to a birthday party. For a bus, of course. To many, it's not just a bus, but the bus.
The design, the fact that it's a London icon, it's the London bus. Anywhere you go in the world, you say London bus, people go, ah, Routemaster.
Ash from the London Transport Museum was among hundreds of people who spent a sunny summer's weekend celebrating 70 years of the Routemaster. It was in September 1954 that RM1, the first pre-production Routemaster, was first seen in public at the Commercial Motor Show.
We're lucky to have RM1, which is the first one ever built, way back in 1954, 70 years ago. So it's still going strong, as well, as you can see.
You will indeed see for yourself if you head over to the Bus Inspector's YouTube channel. And not just RM1, but many of its spawn. The magnificent sight of Routemasters as far as the eye can see. Prior to its September launch, RM1 had been in development and build at London Transport's famous Chiswick Works. So where better for the Routemaster Association to hold a party?
My dad was bus driver 1958 to 1987. I started in 1987. And when I was a kid, I used to hang off the gates and watch the buses coming in and out in the 1970s. And then they used to let me in because they knew Dad, the security guards knew Dad. And then I used to come in, they used to take me to the canteen, which was there, biggest canteen on London Transport. And I used to go eating in there. Yeah, and so this place is always, yeah, fun, and I loved it.
Although unrecognisable today, as the modern Chiswick Business Park, complete with lakes and landscaping, it was hallowed ground indeed. In his opening speech to the crowds, Lord Hendy of Richmond Hill rightly addressed the question everybody was asking themselves.
Yeah, I think the research laboratory is about over there, and I think that road there is about where you started turning right onto the skid path.
It's hard to imagine the scale of what once happened at the works, and hard to overestimate the contribution it made to the development of London's most famous bus.
In its heyday, this was one of the most extraordinary organisations in the world, an organisation that could design its own buses, get them built, operate them, and actually design them in a way that has left them almost impervious to any damage except for fire, and that's why so many of them have lasted.
That so many Routemasters have survived is often discussed by enthusiasts, some with delight, though not all.
I despair now. I recently had bought the 2024 edition of the PSV Circle to preserve buses, and I look at these reams and reams and reams of Routemasters.
Preservation pioneer Michael Dryhurst.
When I was negotiating to buy FU63, there was a similar group with same interests at Worthing. They heard I was after FUF-63. They'd put in a bid for FUF-60. They contacted me and said, Michael, how far advanced are you? And I said, well, I'm actually picking it up on Saturday of this week. Whereupon they then stopped bidding for it, because our attitude in those days was, what's the point of having two of the same thing? Get something else that needs preserving.
Whatever your own view, the prolific survival of the Routemaster in preservation certainly does present a dilemma for the bus inspectors. Their project to grade the nation's historic buses and coaches aims to identify and record the things that make each vehicle special. Inevitably, their work is focused on finding differences between survivors.
I'm sure nearly all their owners, or the ones which are preserved, think that they've got something special, but in truth, one of the reasons why they're so interesting is because they were all made the same, virtually. It's implausible that they can all survive the next 50 years. So let's work out which ones are worth keeping.
Ray Bignall is coordinating the project.
It is an issue in as much as you're comparing a lot of vehicles that probably are very similar. It would be perfectly logical that there could be 50 Routemasters with a very similar score. But the issue will come when they start to become thinned out in number, and you have to start looking very seriously at how you keep a small representative sample for the long term.
So, are Routemasters really all the same?
No, they're not. They're all individual vehicles.
A lot of them are red because they were in service in London.
You had the Routemaster, the RM for inner London, then you had the RCL for long journeys on the outer London.
This is green because it went out on Green Line country routes and did excursions and whatever.
The RML was the longer one for London, the RM was the standard size for London.
Doors at the back.
You had the RMC, which was the coach for the countryside.
It's a coach version, which means you've got more legroom, better padded seats, luggage racks.
RMA for the airport, that was...
They have different types of engines.
The original RMs, you had two types of engines. You had the AC and you had the Leyland type.
RM3, for example, has got RML3 on it. And people say, oh, that's not Routemaster lengthen. It's not. The L is because it's got a Leyland engine rather than an AC, which is what 1 and 2 have.
And then in the 90s, when we had the refurbs, then you had the Cummings.
Ash from the LT Museum and Routemaster co-owner Simon Persaud. As well as the design differences, every Routemaster surely has its own story to tell. Pick an owner, and they'll be quick to tell you theirs.
Well, Andrew, proud owner of RML 2372 since late summer 2005. After a little sojourn in Yorkshire for a few years, she's back in the south-east, and I'm pleased to say that we finally sorted out a long-standing repair and was able to do that. So finally, might be able to get back on the road and do one or two trips. She's got character, and the first big trip we did was to Showbus up at Duxford. And what happened, of course, she broke down on the way home. She came back attached to her tow truck down the M11 and on the M25 at 55 miles an hour about midnight. So she became Emma, because the nickname was Emma Gonna Get There. Best thing I ever did. Wouldn't be parted with her for the world, really.
The Bus Inspector's Grading Project answers calls for a means of prioritising the most significant preserved vehicles in future. A recognition that not everything can survive in perpetuity. Although still a very impressive turnout, there were undoubtedly fewer Routemasters at the 70th birthday rally than there had been at the 60th celebrations a decade ago. And not all were in preservation. Some were still earning their keep, and not just as buses.
The Big Red Bus Bar.
Big Red Bus Bar.
Find us on Facebook. So it's a 1967 RML.
2690 is the number.
Came out of service in 2003. Was set up as a vegan restaurant in Brick Lane for a few years.
Called the Routemaster Cafe.
And then was sold and converted into a bar, which we bought and have been running for the last 12 years.
Our bus is 2464 RML. It's predominantly for the NHS, doing COVID injections and mech checks for high blood pressure. Goes around mostly Kent. In the summer months, we do festivals on Saturdays. The inside is a small waiting area with the one original seat and an additional seat. And then you've got a partition door with, we go in, that's the consulting room where the nurses would sit. Upstairs, he's got an extended roof for tall people, so if you're 6'2", you won't bang your head on our bus.
It's not just Routemasters which have survived in large numbers. There's an old enthusiast's joke about the London Transport GS type.
Yes, there's something like 342, aren't there, in preservation of the 84 which were built.
The Bus Inspector's Grading Project could help to make preservation more strategic in the longer term, especially for museums and trusts. But as we discovered in episode 1, private preservation is more subjective.
My dad went and spent his mortgage money on a Leyland National.
People buy what they like, so some duplication is inevitable.
So I have a fleet of 3 Leyland Nationals. One of them is an Alder Valley Mark 1 Phase 2. And it was new to Alder Valley in 1976.
Claire Fairbrother is a well-known preservationist in the southeast. and organiser of the hugely popular Alton Bus Rally. She also loves Leyland Nationals.
I also have two Trent Leyland Nationals, a Mark 1 Phase 1, and the second one is a Mark 1 Phase 2, like the Alder Valley one. They look quite modern for their time, very boxy, but with like rounded corners. And they've got a very distinctive clattery sound, especially on tickover. If I'm honest, I don't actually remember them at all in service. They were driver trainers where I lived, which was sort of West London at the time when I was a child. But it was actually through my friends and my dad.
As with the Routemaster, standardisation was a key principle in the Leyland National's design and development.
It was all part of the National Bus and the scheme to force you to buy the bus, the standard bus as well, which is the utopia of the bus builder's world, standard bus. So you could only buy it in four colours originally, which went down to two colours. By the time they went down to two colours, you could only have the interior in one colour, which was brown. So, and it was very much a, you either buy it with all the frills or a B series, which had no pod, slightly cheaper lighting, slightly different heating, and they were a little bit shorter as well, some of the, so you had two lengths, but they were the standard bus.
With Claire's deep knowledge of the type, three buses that might seem the same become three very different individuals.
One of the Trent ones is GNU 568N, and that was new to Trent in 1974. It is actually a little bit special because it was Trent's very first ordered Leyland National. So it wasn't the first one they had for service. It was the first one that they had ordered because I believe they'd taken over Midland General by that point and so were running Midland General Leyland Nationals, but that was the first one they'd ordered.
The flagship of Claire's Leyland National fleet is her restored Alder Valley Mark 1. Now resplendent in the company's 1980s livery of green and yellow, after lots of hard work.
Years and years of hard graft, and you just got to do little bits as you go along, really. We've repainted it a couple of times. We've had to do various bits of body work, remove, change panels, do some of the structural work underneath, and we get it regular serviced, and that, I think, is key. Some of it you can do yourself, and some of it you can't do yourself, or you choose the jobs you want to do, because preservation is all about, for me, is fun, so it's got to stay fun.
Leyland Nationals came out of regular service at a time when bus preservation was well established, and so several have survived. So what might the bus inspectors find special about Claire's Alder Valley National?
It's not overly special at all, but it's special to us. And it's special to us because of all the good days out we've had, the blood, the sweat, the tears, the good times, the bad times, the breakdowns, the days out. But if you were valuing it, you'd go, well, it's not the first of anything. It's not the last of anything. The one thing it does have is obviously we have had it preserved for quite a long time. It's quite well known in the bus scene.
In fact, one measure used by the bus inspectors in scoring and grading is whether a vehicle is nationally typical. And Claire's bus is an excellent example of a nationally significant type. So it would score well in that category, and probably others too. For the future of bus preservation, Claire feels optimistic.
I've got a lot of hope for the future. I just hope that the skills are maintained going forward and people look at it in a pragmatic way. You can't save them all, but it would be nice to have a good few types of the same going forward. But also people need to spend the time on it and not just buy them and part them up and run them into the ground. You've got to spend money on them.
We have three heritage vehicles. We think they perform quite a role. All of them are directly relevant to us, and yeah, the employees love them.
As all the ingredients were there, the idea evolved into a charitable trust and establishing a museum to house everything, with the centrepiece being the heritage fleet.
Earlier in the podcast, we met Andrew Wickham and Anthony Delane Smith, two managing directors leading different operations in the bus industry today. both recognise the value of celebrating the history of their operations. And alongside their contemporary buses, both maintain a heritage fleet.
People just love it. They love the liveries and the smell. It's just everything about it, the look of it, the shape, and people just find it fascinating.
Andrew Wickham and his team at Go South Coast have recently taken delivery of a new Bristol VRT. Well, that's how it looks.
So this is our 1979 Bristol VRT. We've owned it since it was new. It was refurbished by the old Wilts and Dorset. It's then more recently had a further refurbishment. It's probably now better than new, a complete rebuild to both the inside and outside of the bus.
Buses that work for a living require maintenance, repairs, and if you keep them long enough, major restoration.
The bus was in quite poor condition through the corrosion. There'd been a bit of water ingress, so you know, the solution was a complete rebuild. So that was a new frame, a lot of new panels. Every window pan had to come out to be refurbished. All the seats have been recovered, so what that means is new foams and backs in the seats, new moquette. The poles we have recoated, so they're like new again. And a particular sort of vogue of the 80s and 90s was putting moquette on ceilings. That was a very popular thing on these refurbished VRs and on new buses, certainly for Wilts and Dorset and I think for others. So we had appropriate moquette for the seats and the ceilings made up, and that's been put on the bus.
The grey, black and red striped moquette matches the colours and the era of the exterior livery, chosen by staff as the one they most wanted the bus to wear. The extensive work was carried out in-house.
We sent it over to the workshops at Southern Vectis back in 2020. That took some years because we were doing it on the edge of the bench in people's spare time, but the bus eventually was finished at the back end of last year. It entered service again back in with us at the start of this year. The first thing it did was the King Alfred running day in Winchester around Easter time.
Head over to the Bus Inspector's YouTube channel for an exclusive video tour.
Yes, I love the heritage. Ultimately, all of this is about keeping our employees motivated and engaged, which is important, and I have an excellent bunch of people working here. Yeah, personally, I love the fact that we're using long-established brands and we look good on the road. That isn't the reason, because I love it. The reason is that our customers love it. We're getting passenger growth year on year. We have a motivated workforce, and that's what makes a bus company succeed.
Back on the tranquil island of Delane, the Delane Buses heritage fleet has been forming since 1979.
It all started with my father's regrets of scrapping one of the W&G Ducrow bodied single deckers that my grandfather had kept chickens in when its working life had come to an end. He decided that we would retain the last half cab in the fleet, which was the second Yates bodied Leyland Titan PD3 RCT3, which was withdrawn from service in 1979.
Since then, the fleet has grown steadily as Delane vehicles have either been repurchased and restored or retained upon their withdrawal from service.
3 years later, he rescued the Leyland Tiger Cub, which was imminently going to scrap, and that was eventually restored by Leicestershire Museum of Technology. And then in 1990, the Leyland Titan PD2, which had been preserved privately, had fallen on hard times. So we repurchased it and restored it, and it was later then joined by the Atlantean when it was withdrawn from service in 2000. And similarly, the Tiger, which was withdrawn in 2008, and the Olympian joined on December the 31st, 2016, which was the last day of step operation permitted in the UK. So it worked the last day in service like many Olympians and step entrance vehicles did, and then was withdrawn upon return to the depot and became part of the heritage fleet.
I make that six.
And finally, last year, the first DDA compliant vehicle in the fleet, on its 23rd anniversary of entering service, we decided it should have a part to play in our history. So it was withdrawn and joined the heritage fleet, which gives us the seven vehicles we have today, which are all operational and all continue to do what they did throughout the working lives, which is to carry passengers.
With such a comprehensive fleet to showcase Delane heritage, plans were made to future-proof the collection.
In 2015, I think it became clear that the industry was heading into some very uncertain times, particularly for operators. So the family decided it was probably time to separate the heritage fleet away from the business. And what started out as just an idea to move the buses out, in view of the considerable amount of sort of ledgers, documents, artifacts and memorabilia dating back to the 1890s, as all the ingredients were there, the idea evolved into a charitable trust and establishing a museum to house everything, with the centrepiece being the heritage fleet, and enable us to preserve and display the history of the company for this and future generations to enjoy.
The vehicles are a living record of the company's heritage. But as a family business, they're also an important part of Anthony's family history.
I grew up with all these vehicles, the older ones as a child playing in them, and the latter ones actually specking them up with the bodybuilders and watching them being built. So it's very personal to me. Probably the most personal connection is with the 1960 Yates bodied Leyland Titan PD3. I passed my test in that at the age of 18. And last year, I got to accompany my daughter to church in a wedding in that vehicle. So it's a very, very personal thing to me.
Next time on the Bus Inspectors podcast, the ones we missed.
We got a message to say that it had developed a fault and had been scrapped.
And the ones we mustn't miss in the future.
People sometimes don't see them as a preservation-worthy project at the time, so they don't save them.
And we'll join the bus inspectors on their latest visits to museums and collections. Follow us in the meantime on our socials and at thebusinspectors.com. The Bus Inspectors podcast was presented and produced by me, David Shepherd. Our guests were Andrew Wickham, Anthony Delane Smith, and Claire Fairbrother, with appearances from Peter, Lord Hendy of Richmond Hill, Simon Passard, Ray Bignall, Ash, Helen, Rebecca, Bryony, Gail, and Michael Dryhurst.
I mean, how many route masters are preserved?
Special thanks to staff at Go South Coast and Delane Buses, and to volunteers and members of the Route Master Association and the London Transport Museum. The Bus Inspectors podcast was brought to you by the National Association of Road Transport Museums.